The Melbourne AA Steps Weekend, 2009. Here's Susan, sharing on Step 3.
Hi everybody, I'm Susan and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
my home group is Breakfast with Bill in St Kilda, and my sobriety date's the 14th of January 2008. Been asked to talk about Step 3, which is actually my new... You know, it's my relief that I get, which is the same relief that I used to get at once from taking a drink. But now I get that same relief from turning my life and my will over to the care of God each day. You know, I had to become convinced that my life run on self-will would not be a success. You know, and that took some convincing. And, you know, my sponsor helped me with that. She did it in a loving way, but at the time it didn't seem like it. And we looked back into my life and saw the mess that I'd made, and that my life had not been a success. You know, I'd picked up a drink at the age of 14, and it was my solution. It gave me that relief from the confusing, lonely, you know, lacking direction, purpose. Life, you know, that was rolling around in my head, and I got relief straight away from a drink, and so I went to daily use straight away, and you know, and it got me into life, and I didn't feel quite so alone, and life wasn't so confusing, and it gave me a group of people to hang around with and something to do, and you know, and it was my solution. But by the time I was, you know, about 18. Life was spiralling a bit out of control, and I thought, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. And that confusion and that, you know, isolation and lack of direction had, you know, come back again. And so I, you know, left the big city that I'd grown up in and ended up in a very small fisherman's town, remote Queensland. And, you know, and that worked for a while again. You know, the new environment and the... copious amounts of alcohol that you drink in a fishing town and working as a barmaid, you know, that it worked again. That hole inside of me, that confusion and isolation, you know, disappeared for a while, and a couple of years later it, you know, it would start to come back again, and so I would move town again, and the new environment and new people, and, you know, always running, never having contact with anybody. I was on my own always, eventually, you know, in about my mid-20s, that it was pointed out to me my drinking wasn't normal, and I didn't get it. You know, they pointed out that drinking 10 hours every night was not normal, and I didn't understand it. I was thirsty. You know, I truly was thirsty. At midnight, after drinking for 7 hours, I would be thirsty. I'd be craving that drink, You know, life, I didn't get it. I thought I wanted to drink. I thought I liked being wasted. I didn't realise that I needed to be drinking to function. And, you know, life rolled on, but I did very well in a career, and I settled in a town for, you know, 6 years. It was just extraordinary for me to live in the same town for 6 years. But in my early 30s, that hole inside of me started to really grow and become overwhelming, that feeling of isolation, loneliness, there's something really wrong with me. It was a big gaping hole inside of me, the confusion and lack of purpose and what is the point to life? Why don't I get it? Was my cry. It's like, I just don't get it. And so, once again, I quit my job and I left the town, I left my partner, and thinking that that's what was wrong with me. It never occurred to me that it was actually the drinking. I still thought that was what was my friend, and that was my solution, and that made me okay. So I moved back to the big city, and you know, the drinking became, without a job or a partner, became a daily, morning, noon and night. It was a carton of cider wasn't working, so I was adding vodka to my stubbies, and it was day, morning, noon and night, as I say, that I was drinking, and it just wasn't working for me anymore. That loneliness, that hole, that never, I didn't fit in anywhere. I couldn't work out where my place was or what life was about and what I was meant to be doing in it. And you know, I was introduced to methamphetamines, and that was my new solution. I got that again. You know, that filled that gaping hole. The loneliness went away. The despair. It gave me a purpose again. I felt like I fitted into a crowd again, and I was okay. But of course, you know, it didn't take very long, and the arrests started, and the skipping town started, the living in crappy boarding houses, not being able to use my real name, you know, and that despair and hopelessness really kicked in, that I didn't have a place. I was now, you know, an outcast in my community, and I didn't fit in anywhere, and nobody would have me, and I didn't feel worthy of it, and I discovered, though, at that time, that I couldn't stop even when I really, really wanted to. And that in itself gave me a whole nother level of helplessness. You know, it's like, why can't I want to stop? If I could just have a break, I'd be okay. And it would all be all right, and I would work out what's wrong with me, but I couldn't stop. And, you know, I tried over and over for a couple of years, you know, wanting to stop, and I couldn't stop. And as I say, my life had, you know, crappy boarding houses, waking up crying by then. I was so alone. I had no family, no friends. I hadn't been able to work for 5 years. Miserable. I'd never been so miserable. I remember that hopelessness, that hell, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I didn't know how to fix it. And I cried out one day that I needed to change, and I didn't know how to change, and I needed help to do it. And from that moment, life started to change. You know, I got myself out of that last crappy boarding house and into a women's refuge. And as you can see, I made a real dandy job at running my life. And, you know, that's what was pointed out to me by my sponsor. You know, that's me running the show, running my life, managing my own life, got me that. You know, I was 37 years of age, and that was my life. And, yeah, it still really touches me, the mess that I made running my life. So I became convinced that running my life didn't work, that I was barely functioning as a human being. And that was the reality. I was wanted by police, you know. I couldn't work. I had no friends. I had no family. You know, that's not a life. It's barely survival. So, you know, I came into the fellowship. And I started to do meetings, and I started to listen, but, you know, it took me many months of doing meetings and becoming convinced, you know, that I was powerless. It took me many months to actually admit that I was powerless, you know, and that my life was unmanageable. It seems weird that it took so long for me when that was the picture of my life, you know, but it did. It took many months of smashing that delusion, you know, that managing my own life was going to work, you know. And that was a smashing blow to my ego, you know, and that's what took so long, that ego deflation that they talk about in this fellowship. And it took me, I had a lot of pride, you know. There were times in my life when I owned homes and had careers and travelled, and, you know, I saw all of that. I thought I was an intelligent person, and I thought that this, my capacity, my capabilities and my intelligence, I could do this, you know. I could work life out. Everybody else is managing. Why can't I? Well, you know, when I finally admitted that I was powerless over alcohol, and I couldn't manage my own life, and so, you know, I started to see the other people in the fellowship who had some happiness and some usefulness, and they were sober, and they said that a higher power, you know, was the main ingredient to their happy, sober life. And, you know, they weren't lying to me, and they weren't joking, and, you know, I had to come to believe that, you know, perhaps a power greater than me could help me as well. And, you know, that took, as I say, many months to sort of get through those first couple of steps. And, you know, and then again, you know, to come up to saying, well, I'm going to decide to hand my life over to this God I don't know, because I have no spiritual concepts, no religious connections. I had no idea what God did, what God's role was in people's lives. And, So I'd got to the point where I had no choice. I think, was I believe the people in the room when they said that a higher power did it for them, and when they and that they took the third step and that they continued on, and I looked at where how my life had turned out, and my life and I still wasn't getting any better, you know, inside of me. Sure, the outsides were looking a little bit better. I had a flat at least, you know, and I was staying out of jail, and you know, that was about it. But you know, the inside was not getting any better. I was still shaking with anxiety. I was still picking up a drink every week or two, and for that relief. And so I had no choice in the end, I believe, that it was either die an alcoholic or pick up the spiritual tools of this program. And they start, you know, with step three. And so I made that decision that I would become willing. You know, it was about the willingness. I became willing. I didn't make a decision. I became willing. I became willing to take direction. I became willing to work the rest of the steps. I became willing to ask for help. I became willing to open my mind up and my heart and get a bit vulnerable and start being honest. And I just became willing to give it a go and to let go. And to stop managing my own life, stop making plans, stop making decisions, stop rationalising and trying to make sense of it all and just let go, you know, and put my faith in a higher power that I don't know, I didn't know, I still don't know, and put my faith in the people that have gone before me, put my faith in this book that was handed to me that millions of people have recovered using. And, you know, after doing, as I say, many months of meetings, this stuff, I couldn't argue with this stuff anymore. And so I made the decision, you know, to turn my will and my life over. And that's where my relief comes. You know, wow, I don't have to run the show. I don't have to manage. I don't have to understand. I don't have to make sense of it. I don't have to work it all out. I don't have to make anybody do anything. I don't have to do anything except, you know, turn up at meetings, read the literature, work the rest of the steps, pray, meditate. You know, there's not a lot I have to do in my life today. Everything else falls into place for me. It's a wonderful thing. It's such a relief. I'll get, you know, I'll wake up some mornings with a bit of crisis or, you know, a bit of anxiety, and it's all, oh God, it's so serious, you know, and I've got to work this out, and it's like, oh, that's right, no, hang on, sit down. What do I have to do? I have to pray, okay. And I say the third step prayer, I offer myself to God, you know, relieve me of the bondage of self, take away my difficulty so I can help people. And what a beautiful way to start the day. You know, I'll go for my walk and I'll do my meditation, and if that crisis is still bugging, still trying to have a go at me, still trying to latch on, you know, I'll go back to what that other willingness, you know, I became willing to ask for help. I became willing to get honest with a sponsor. So I'll ring my sponsor and I'll say, hey, my head's going crazy. You know, that's all part of my step three, that I make a decision to turn my will and my life over. You know, God talks through people as well for me. And sometimes if I'm still so caught up in the crisis and the fear and myself that I block God out from me, the path to God. So I can't really get through. So that's where I need other people, and they're very important to my life. And then I can relax, you know. It's like, okay, what do I need to do? And it's really simple. That's where I'm sort of repeating myself now, because it's got that simple. It's not a big complicated thing for me, step three anymore. I've got to get out of the way. I've got to take direction. And I've got to turn to my higher power and ask for guidance. And it's not on, you know, it's not on my outcome. I don't know what's best for me. That was the other thing I had to let go of. I don't know what's best for me. I don't know what's right. And we could tell by the way my life ended up, you know. And geez, my life, by turning my will and my life over, I can't believe how good my life is, you know. It's just extraordinary. I work 3 days a week, you know, I have sponsees, and I love reading the book with other people. I go to meetings, you know, I get to 45 minutes in meditation every day. I get to walk on the beach every day. I have friends. That's, you know, blows me. I've never managed to have friendships, and you know, this, I have a cat, I get to spend Sundays at home, I like being at home alone. You know, I mean, I couldn't have planned this if I tried, you know. It's like I had no idea what's good for me, and I love it. Life's good. Life's good sober, which is an extraordinary idea. When I first came in, I 23 years, I drank every single day, you know, and to think that I could live without alcohol, but not just live without alcohol, but live a really good, happy life, you know. It's a beautiful thing. I hope I never forget how to, you know, the spiritual tools of this program, because I work them each day, and they give me peace. They give me, I feel content, I feel gratitude, I have calm moments, I have joy. I wake up and go, how fucking good is this, you know? I've never felt like that in my life. How fucking good is this? So, you know, I'm really happy to be a member of AA, and I hope everyone in this room grabs a hold of it, makes that decision that everyone who has a happy, sober life made, you know, and, you know, thy will, not mine, be done. Thanks.
This share and other shares like it are available from our website, stepsweekend.aagroup.org.au. Thanks for letting us share.